It's 6 a.m., and Captain Riley lays on the hard-packed earth, contemplating how to convince City Hammett to bring him along to Swera. He hasn't slept all night, thinking about the letter he has to write to the British consul, and there are 1,000 ways a letter can go wrong. He's never even met the consul, and there's no guarantee a note will convince him that a person named Riley even exists. That's why he's come up with a new plan. If Riley can convince Hammett to take him along, he can answer the consul's questions in person to pay the ransom and save his men. But Hammett doesn't want to hear it. He points to a small wooden table and hands Riley a piece of paper and a reed with some ink. "Write, Hammett, please, take me with you." "No." The answer is final. There are already rumors floating through the villages that there are white sailors here. We'll be attacked, and you'll be taken and sold. I've spent everything I have for you and your men. You must stay here. My brother will protect you. Riley knows not to argue. When the brothers agree on a course of action, there is no changing their minds. He picks up the pen and starts to write. He must make each word count. Make sure the stranger on the other end believes him. "Sir, on August 28th, the brig Commerce from Gibraltar for America was wrecked on Cape Bojador." Hammett's voice startles him. "The ransom price has gone up. Your friend will need to pay $200 for you and $200 for Horace and Aaron, and $160 for your two other men." It's twice the price they talked about weeks before, but Hammett's not done. "Also, a double barrel gun, and one for my brother. Saeed helped save your life." Riley nods. What choice does he have? He continues writing, explaining what he and his crew have been through. There are 4 men with him, all in bad shape, all captive. He lists the ransom price to free them. He provides the name of a bank in London and a friend in Gibraltar with a promise to pay the consul back as soon as he and his men are free. If the ransom isn't paid, he writes, he will die. "I leave a wife and 5 helpless children to mourn my death." He stops for a moment, overcome with emotion. Then he looks down again. There's only space for 2 more lines. "Hurry up, Reyes. We have to go." Riley imagines the consul receiving the letter. Hammett's rough hand, his scarred face, and intense black eyes. What will the consul think? "City Hammett will hand you this and tell you where we are. He is a worthy man. Please believe him." Then he signs his name and folds up the note. He quickly addresses the letter to any consul, English, French, Spanish, or American, or to any Christian merchants in Swera. With luck, the letter will end up in friendly hands. Hammett takes the letter and tucks it into his robe. The 2 men exchange 1 final look. They don't need to say anything. They know what's at stake. Hammett will either return with good news, or Riley will die.
You already know that Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. But did you know that they have a new collection of exclusive thrillers? Featuring captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances, you'll be kept on the edge of your seat for sure. One Audible original I'm excited to listen to is The Gray Man by Mark Greaney. It's about a former CIA operative that's now a killer for hire. The Gray Man has also been adapted into a Netflix film, so I know it's going to be good. Listen along. As an Audible member, you get 1 title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/theodds or text the odds to 500-500. That's audible.com/theodds or text the odds to 500-500.
Against the Odds is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join their over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
From Wondery, I'm Mike Corey, and this is Against the Odds. In our last episode, Captain James Riley convinced Sidi Hammett to deliver him and his men to the city of Swera in exchange for a ransom. It was a risky gamble. He knows no one in Swera, and if Hammett discovers Riley's deception, he will be killed and the rest of his men sold to the highest bidder. This is episode 4, The Letter. Sidi Hammett strides through the gates of the port city of Swera. The glistening waters of the Atlantic Ocean stretch out into the horizon. He can see dozens of vessels docked at the pier, flying flags from all over the world. The streets are filled with people of many nationalities. Arabs and Berbers mingle with black Africans and white-skinned Europeans. Everyone is busy, so different from the quiet of the desert. Suddenly, a man emerges from the crowd. He is broad-chested and wearing blue robes. A jeweled saber hangs at his side. "Good morning, gentlemen." The man notices Hammett's dusty clothes. "I see you're a merchant with no caravan. What brings you to our lovely city, my friend?" Hammett can tell by the way the man carries himself. He's someone important. "I'm here to deliver a note to the British consul. I'm helping an English sailor that's been shipwrecked in Cape Bojador." "Welcome. I'm a sailor myself. My name is Bale Cossum, and I happen to know the consul well. His name is William Wilshire. Come, I'll take you there." As Hammett follows the man through the wide streets, he's struck by the four-story homes and massive gateways and towers. The town is bustling. Between the buildings are narrow, maze-like alleys filled with merchant booths overflowing with spices and cloth from all over the world. This is the Kasbah, the inner sanctum of the government and business. Bill Cossum stops in front of a large multi-story home and knocks at the door. "The consul lives here." Two servants answer and lead the men into an office. Behind a large desk sits a young man with neatly trimmed hair and a thin nose. He quickly stands.
"Bill Cossum, always a pleasure to see you. Who are these men?"
"Give him the letter, my friend." Hammett fishes the scrap of paper out of his robe and hands it to the consul. While Wilshire reads it, Hammett stands quietly, examining his face. When he gets to the end, he reads it again and drops the letter on his desk. He looks at Hammett and cocks his head. Hammett knows the look. The man is assessing him to see if he is lying. Hammett stands straight and puffs out his chest. He has nothing to hide.
"Sidi Hammett, what can you tell me of this Captain Riley?"
Hammett smiles.
"Captain Riley is an intelligent and very brave man. He is an honorable man with a wife and children. He survived much along with his men. Some of them are sick, but I've done the best I can for them."
The consul quietly considers, then he picks up the letter again.
"Gentlemen, you will have to excuse me. I have some urgent business. Can my servants show you to the drawing room for a cup of tea? I should be done shortly."
Hammett isn't sure what to think. He's beginning to wonder if this consul knows Captain Riley at all. Riley doesn't like this waiting game. It gives him too much time to imagine what might go wrong in Swera. Even if Hammett reaches the British consul, he may not be willing to pay ransom for an American crew. And then, on the sixth day after Hammett's departure, everything changes.
"Saeed, open up now. I know you're in there."
Riley watches from a shaded corner of the courtyard as Saeed scurries to open the gate. It's a man Riley's never seen before. He's tall and dark and wears a long white robe. Even from a distance, Riley can see he commands respect by the way the villagers scuttle out of his way. From his saddle atop a large white horse, he surveys the courtyard.
"Saeed, this place is filthy. Why are these men laying around? Put them to work."
Saeed runs to help the man off his horse, apologizing profusely. It's a side of Saeed Riley has never seen before. He's clearly not in control any longer.
"Yes, of course, Sheikh Ali. Sorry."
Sheikh? Is this the Sheikh that Hammett and his brother talk about in whispers? Hammett's father-in-law?
Riley senses his fortune is changing, and not for the better. In the early evening, Riley finds out why the Sheikh is here when he and his men are summoned into the house. The Sheikh sits on a mat. The golden rays of the setting sun stream through a small window across his face. He motions for Riley to turn in circles so he can get a better look at him.
"You're so thin. What value could you possibly have?"
The Sheikh doesn't wait for an answer.
"Saeed tells me that Hammett spent everything they had for you and your men. Did you know that Hammett owes me a lot of money?"
The Sheikh motions his shipmate Clark to step forward. Clark is still sunburned, his skin blistering. He lifts up one of his arms, then the other. He looks taken aback when he sees Clark's tattoo of a cross.
"No English will pay for this one. He cannot be ransomed. He will come work for me."
Riley looks at Saeed, who says nothing. He can't let this happen.
"Sir, I have a friend in Swara. I promise he will pay a lot of money for Clark and for all of us."
But the Sheikh doesn't believe him. He turns to Saeed.
"You and your brother were fools to trust this man."
But then, the next day, the Sheikh seems to change his mind. Now he thinks the amount Hammett is asking isn't enough. The Sheikh could get much more for them. He tells Saeed he will stay and wait for Hammett's return, and he will settle it then. After all, Hammett owes him twice what these sailors are worth. William Wilshire thumbs through back issues of the Gibraltar Chronicle, looking for any mention of the commerce. The letter said his ship wrecked on the 28th of August, coming from Gibraltar. The man Hammett seems to be trustworthy, but Wilshire can't go on a feeling. He needs facts. There it is. The August 12th issue mentions an American ship called the Commerce docking at the port. It arrived from New Orleans. So Riley isn't British. He's from the United States. Wilshire considers this new fact carefully. Yes, the references Riley listed are respected merchants, but the problem is the amount. $920, twice the rate America and England have agreed to as the ransom cap for captive sailors. If he pays more, word will get around, and the price will keep going up. And then there's his job to consider. Wilshire is a young diplomat. If he ends up losing a huge sum of money to ransom foreigners, he might get recalled back to England. His career over, before it even began. Wilshire stares out the window at the busy streets of Swara, watching sailors from many countries walk among the crowds. These men risk their lives by crossing the ocean to connect the world through commerce. But they know the risks. He's made his decision. Wilshire calls the attendant to bring the visitors back in. Sidi Hammett strides into the consul's office behind Bill Cossum. His eyes are blank, the same expression he uses for any trade. He will betray nothing of his nerves kicking at his belly. He's given up everything for this one single deal. If Riley was lying, he goes back with nothing but disgrace. His brother Saeed will never let him forget it. He'll be paying off his father-in-law, Sheikh Ali, for the rest of his life. He studies the consul Wilshire's face for clues, but his expression gives away nothing. Bill Cossum speaks first.
"Were you able to resolve your urgent business matter, consul?"
"I was. Thank you for asking. Now, about the ransom for Captain Riley and his men."
Hammett folds his hands and waits to hear his fate. Riley sits on the ground on the north side of the compound. It's been 8 days since Sidi Hammett left for Swara, and still, no word. Riley's worried about his men. Byrne still has a fever. Clark's sunburn is blistering, and he can see hope is dying a little more each day. But at least Aaron and Horace seem to be faring a bit better.
"You're looking well, Horace. How do you feel?"
"I'm fine, Captain, but I keep thinking about Sidi Hammett. What happens if he doesn't come back with the money?"
Horace's eyes widen at the sound of footsteps outside the gate.
"Do you think it's Hammett?"
Saeed rushes by to open the door. When he returns, he's with two men. One of the men is Sidi Mohammed, the man who left with Hammett. The other is a tall, dark man wearing elegant robes who Riley has never seen before. To his shock, the man speaks to them in English.
Howdy do, Captain.
Riley quickly jumps to his feet.
My name is Reis Belkossim. I'm here to tell you that your letter has reached one of the finest men in Swera, an Englishman who is also a friend. His name is William Wilshire, and he sent this for you.
Belkossim holds out a letter. Riley is suddenly overcome. He hands the letter to Aaron.
Aaron, can you read it, please? Your eyes are better than mine.
Aaron's voice is soft.
My dear and afflicted sir, I have just received your note by Sidi Hammett, the contents of which have called forth my sincere pity for your sufferings and those of your companions. This letter will be delivered to you by Reis Belkossim, in whom you may place the fullest faith. I have agreed to pay the full sum to Sidi Hammett upon your safe arrival in this town. You will be at liberty to commence your journey upon receipt of this letter.
Riley turns to Belkossim.
This British consul, he'll pay for all of my men?
Yes, Captain, for all of them.
As Belkossim follows Said into the house, Riley turns to his shipmates. Their faces are overjoyed. But then he hears the angry roar of the Sheikh coming from inside. He's yelling in protest.
My son-in-law is a fool. He accepted too low a price for these men.
Beneath his voice, he hears the even tones of Belkossim trying to calm him. He tells the Sheikh he bought the men with his own money, that it's done. He paid Hammett before he left Swara. His son-in-law only stayed behind to ensure his safe return with all of the men. Riley looks back at the letter. He knows Belkossim is lying. It says right on the page the consul will pay Hammett upon their return, but the Sheikh doesn't know this. Belkossim is trying to save them. The British consul was right. Riley can trust this man. But Ali smells deceit. He accuses Belkossim of lying. The voices grow louder.
I do not lie. I am incapable of such a betrayal. These men, they're now mine.
The arguing seems to go on forever, but finally they come to an agreement. The sailors will leave with Belkossim at daybreak, but Sheikh Ali and Said will accompany them to Swera to make sure he is telling the truth and to retrieve payment from Hammett himself.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform. Get unparalleled access to job seekers with over 350 million monthly unique visitors globally, according to Indeed data, and an extended reach through Glassdoor. Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, so their matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. So fast that in the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data, worldwide. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/theodds. Just go to Indeed.com/theodds right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/theodds. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
The small caravan sets off in the early morning. The riding is easy now that Riley's belly is full, but he keeps a wary eye on the Sheik. He's acting moody and gruff. On the third day of riding, it starts to pour. It's the first rain Riley and his men have seen in Africa. He should be in good spirits. They're so close to freedom, but the dark skies seem like a bad omen. They pass a small village with walls and turrets. When they get to the entrance gates, Sheik Ali stops them. "We need provisions." Saeed motions the group forward. Something about this feels off. Riley looks at Belkacem. "It's a trap. The Sheik knows the prince, but there's nothing we can do right now." When they get inside, the Sheik is greeted by an old man with a short white beard and a crisp blue robe. They embrace fondly. "The Sheik will call for a council and claim you belong to him. I will do my best to convince him it's not true, but the Sheik is persuasive." Riley's heart sinks. Will this ever be over? When they reach the Sheik's house, a guard motions for Riley and his men to wait outside in the freezing rain. Riley listens to the men's voices through an open window, but he can't hear much through the downpour. When Belkacem comes out, he is shaking his head. "The prince has decided you won't be allowed to continue to Swera. You must wait here for Hammett." "But how will Hammett know we are here?" "They are sending Muhammad with a letter. You'll need to write it. Tell him where we are and what's happened. Tell him that the prince wants Hammett to come with the ransom money. He will make his final decision then." Riley looks at the forlorn faces of his men. He can't hide his own disappointment either. "Don't worry, Captain. Hammett will come." The next morning, Riley watches Muhammad water his camel in preparation to leave. To his surprise, the Sheik is getting ready to head out as well. "I'll be gone for 4 days," he tells Belkacem. "Do not try to leave. You're being guarded by the prince's men. I'll be back before Sidi Hammett arrives." The guards open the gate, and Riley watches the two men ride out across the desert plain. As the gates close, Belkacem turns to him and whispers in his ear, "Don't worry, Captain. I have a plan." Riley paces the room of a small hut, watching his sailors eat. They sit in a corner next to saddlebags, pushing eggs around their plate. A month ago, they would have done anything for a breakfast like this, but now they can hardly eat. They've been locked in here for days, waiting for Hammett to return, but so far, nothing. He knows Belkacem has been working on the prince, trying to convince him of his case while Sheik Ali is gone. But Riley has no idea what will happen when the Sheik finally returns. On the fifth day, Belkacem comes in with some news.
"Get your men ready, Captain. We're leaving for Agadir."
"Agadir? Where's that?"
"Halfway to Swera." "Is the prince letting us go?"
"No, he's coming with us. Word has traveled through neighboring villages that he's holding valuable captives. There's rumors of a raid that I might have had something to do with. I've convinced him it will be safer for us all if we stay in Agadir." "There's just one hitch."
Riley knows what Bel is going to say. He heard the horse come in through the gate late last night, the loud, imperious voice.
"The Sheik."
Belkacem nods.
"Yes, he's coming too. But take heart. When we reach Agadir, we're only a 2-day ride from Swera."
Hammett paces the great room in the consul's house. Nearly missing a collision with Wilshire's clerk, the man quickly skitters out of the way. Normally, Hammett would offer a smile, but today, he's in a foul mood. Belkacem should have returned 2 weeks ago with the crew from the commerce. The consul has the ransom ready to go. Now, he's worried. If he doesn't get paid, he may never see his family again. There's rumors swirling through the villages that there's a group of white sailors traveling north. Have they been attacked? He hates to admit it, but he's grown fond of Captain Riley and Horace, his son. The plight of the sailors has become his own. He's so agitated,
He doesn't even hear the knock at the door. He only stops pacing when Wilshire crosses his path and stands directly in front of him.
What is it, Consul?
He hands Hammett a letter.
It's from Riley. They've been intercepted by Sheikh Ali. He says he owns the men. They're in the town of Shtuka. The prince says to settle the matter, you need to ride south.
Hammett doesn't wait for him to finish. He is already gathering his bags. But Wilshire stops him.
Wait, let me send some men with you. We're both in this now.
Hammett nods his thanks, and then he's out the door. It's late in the night when Riley first smells the scent of the sea. Belkacem points into the distance.
Agadir.
Under the moonlight, Riley sees the glint of fishing boats in the harbor and fishing nets sprawled over the beach. As they make their way through town, the group is quiet. Even the camels seem to know not to bray. When they get to the back of the town, they set up a small camp next to a blacksmith shop. There are more people in the caravan than Riley thought there would be. The prince insisted they take extra guards. Now he's glad for their protection, although he's not sure exactly whose side they're on. Belkacem pulls Riley aside and tells him to stay alert. He's sure the Sheikh is plotting against them. He's going to ride into town and see if he can find any more information. When the crew beds down, everyone is quiet, but Riley can feel their nerves.
You must rest up, men. You'll need strength for the final push. We can trust Belkacem. Have faith.
But it's Riley who can't sleep. Just after midnight, he hears the familiar sound of Kasim's sandals approaching. When he gets close to Riley, he speaks in low tones so the others can't hear.
Wake up your men. Sheikh Ali has made a deal with the governor. They're coming for you. You must leave now. I've already woken up the cameleers to guide you, but you have to ride fast.
Riley jumps up and rouses his men, shaking each of them by the shoulder.
Shh. We have to go. Now.
You have maybe 4 hours before they come after you. I'll try to slow them down. I'll join you just as soon as I can.
As they head off into the night, Riley looks back at the camp. Belkacem is dragging his blanket to the front of Sheikh Ali's tent. To get to Riley and his men, the Sheikh will need to get past him. Riley hopes it's enough. Sidi Hammett peers into the darkness. It's a crescent moon, and the sand glistens white. He's been riding hard for more than a day. He's grateful the British consul sent men and horses with him. It's better to travel in groups. Everyone who lives in the desert knows the desert is a dangerous place at night. Local tribes lay in wait for an opportunity. But right now, the only sound he hears is the breathing of the horses. The dunes are silent. He wonders what happened to his brother Saeed. He knows he wouldn't have much choice if the Sheikh took the sailors and claimed them as his own. But still, he hopes his brother will come around. They've been through so much together. When Hammett sees him again, who will Saeed side with? Him or the Sheikh? He'll find out soon enough. It's still another 2 days to Shtuka. He'll stop in Agadir to water the horses and then carry on. He's sure if he pushes hard, he can make the trip in a day and a half. Riley can't remember the desert ever being this dark. The only way to navigate is by sound. He's grateful Belkacem sent along the cameleers. They urge the animals forward in soothing voices. But Riley is worried. He knows tribes wait in the dark, behind the dunes, looking for foolish people who pass in the night. And then he hears the sound of horses' hooves. His heart skips a beat. Sheikh Ali rides a horse. He must have found them. He leans forward, urging his camel to move faster. But as the sound gets closer, he realizes the riders are not coming from behind them, from Agadir. They're rushing towards them from the north, from Swera. He sees the shadow of the group passing by, but he can only make out the vague form of turbans and hikes. They're moving fast.
And that kind of speed usually means trouble. One of the cameleers whispers in broken Spanish.
Don't say a word. Don't even look at them.
He sees him reach for a gun in his robe. But Riley is higher up than the men on the ground. As the riders come even with the caravan, a glint of moonlight briefly catches their faces. One of them looks familiar.
Hammett?
He holds his breath. If he's wrong, this could be bad. Then, he hears a voice call back.
Riley?
Riley leaps off his horse and runs toward the voice. When he sees the scarred face, he drops to his knees and kisses his hand.
Hammett, I'm so happy to see you. Your father-in-law, he set a trap. He's behind us somewhere. We have to go. Bell Cossum is trying to divert him.
Hammett is silent for a moment.
No, Race, I can't go. I need to deal with the Sheik. He's a bad man. You continue north with your men. If anything happens to me, you can trust the men I am with. They are friends of the British consul. But you must go. I will see you again. Inshallah.
Riley watches Hammett break away and speed off into the night. For the first time since this ordeal began, Riley is more concerned about what will happen to Hammett than he is for himself. Hammett steers his small caravan south towards Agadir, listening to the sound of the coins in his bag jostling against each other as he rides. As he and his men crest the dune, he sees another group riding toward them, fast. As they get closer, they see Bel Qasim and the prince from Shtuka, who he met once before. Behind them is Sheik Ali, followed by Hammett's brother, Saeed. When the Sheik sees Hammett, his face twists in rage. When the two men come face to face, they rein in the camels, who are breathing hard. Sheik Ali speaks first.
Those sailors, they belong to me. How could you be so foolish to think I wouldn't get wind of this? You owe me more money than you can ever repay. I will take them, and we'll consider it a start.
For years, Hammett has lived in fear of Sheik Ali. But now is the moment. He's going to set himself free.
My brother and I owe you $360 for the goods you consigned us, though they are not worth half that much on the market. But to settle this, I will pay you all of it now. And then, we are done. No, $400. You never even told me you were in my territory. You cheated me. And my daughter.
Hammett refuses to take the bait. He knows the Sheik has never seen this much money at one time in his life.
$360. That is my final offer. Consider yourself lucky. The sailors are gone.
Finally, the Sheik agrees. Hammett reaches into the sack and counts out the money. There is still enough for he and Saeed to provide a good life for their families when this is done. He looks at his brother. His face is older and harder. He's a man, and he must make his own decision.
Brother, are you with me?
Saeed bows his head.
Yes, I am with you.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Riley digs his heels into the camel as it crests a steep dune. The caravan had to travel north and slightly east for safety, but they're close to Swara now. He can smell the sea. Hammett and his brother caught up to them late in the evening, along with Bel Qasim. Everyone is determined to get Riley and his men to safety. When Riley gets his first glimpse of the blue ocean, his heart soars. Even after what they've been through,
It represents freedom, connection, and hope. He turns to Horace Savage.
What do you think, son?
I've never seen anything more beautiful in my life.
The city glows in the morning sun. There are several ships in the port. One of them sports the flag of the Union Jack on its mast. It dances in the breeze.
Look, it's the British flag.
Then Riley sees something that takes his breath away. An American flag has been raised on a wooden pole. The whole city has been awaiting their arrival. As they continue down the slope, they're met by a young man dressed in a riding coat and tails. Riley hasn't seen anyone this formal looking since he was in America.
Captain Riley, it's William Wilshire, the British consul.
Riley can't believe how young he is. Not much older than Aaron, maybe 25. When he gets closer, he slides off his horse and hugs Riley like a long-lost brother.
You're safe now, Captain.
He turns to Riley's men and spreads his arms.
You are among friends. Come, let's go to the city.
One day later, the Sultan of Morocco officially declares all the men free. Hammett waits in front of the British consul's house while his brother collects their camels. They have been in Swarah for 2 weeks waiting for the final ransom items. They've just arrived thanks to Captain Riley's friend in Spain. 2 double-barreled shotguns to help keep him and his brother safe on their travels. When Riley steps out of the house, Hammett almost doesn't recognize him. He's clean and freshly shaven, wearing English pants and a blue jacket. They hang off his frame like a child waiting to grow into his clothes. Bill Cossum confided to Hammett that the captain once weighed more than 200 pounds. Now, he's just over 90, despite all the food the council has brought in. Riley hands Hammett the 2 guns, and then stands with hands folded in front of him.
Thank you, City Hammett, for all you've done for me and my men. I am lucky to have met you. May God bless you. Please, look out for the rest of the crew. They're still out there somewhere.
Hammett nods. He doesn't like long goodbyes. In the desert, life is short and luck far between. Only Allah can say who lives and who dies.
I promise you, Reis, if they are still alive, and Allah willing, I will bring you the rest of your crew.
Riley turns away before Hammett can see the tears. He's not sure if it's from the depression and anxiety that's hung over him like a cloud, or if it's because he knows it's unlikely he will ever see Hammett again, the man who risked everything to rescue him. Riley will send Horace and the others ahead to Gibraltar to recover. He'll wait here. If anyone can find his men, it's Hammett. It's March 19th, 1816. Captain James Riley stands on the bow of the U.S. ship Rapid. The brisk March air cuts beneath his collar, but he hardly feels it. The sight of New York Harbor is overwhelming. Home. Well, not quite home. Phoebe and his children are waiting in Connecticut, but he sent word that he's on his way. He sees a bright blue scarf waving in the air and recognizes the face.
Horace, your mother is here.
Horace clatters up to the front of the deck. He's still so thin. Riley worries what his mother will think, but at least he brought her boy home. He wishes he could have done the same for the families of his other shipmates. He waited nearly 3 months for Hammett to return, but nothing. Finally, he had to leave. His men were waiting for him in Gibraltar and his family in America. When they pull up to the dock, he watches Horace sprint down the gangplank and into his mother's arms.
God answered my prayers.
Horace pulls away for a moment in surprise.
Oh, no, mother. I'm alive because of Captain Riley.
When Riley reaches them, he takes off his cap and tells his mother what a brave young man Horace has been on this difficult journey. He also tells his mother about City Hammett and the role he played in their rescue. Horace is only 16 years old, but he's already seen the worst of men and the best. It will take him a long time to recover, but his love for the sea will never leave. Just like Captain Riley,
It's a warm day in April, deep in the Sahara Desert. Normally, Hammett would be joking with his brother Saeed, but today, they have trouble. A small tribe of men, maybe 20, blocking their path. They've been in the desert for nearly a month. Up until now, the only people they've seen have been peaceful nomads. They've even been able to trade with a few of them. That's how they discovered the sailor. The man's captor called him Porter. Hammett instantly recognized the name, one of Captain Riley's men, and Hammett promised to bring him back. He knows that's why the tribe has stopped him. Word travels fast. He fingers the double-barrel shotgun in his lap and looks at his brother.
I don't see any weapons, but you can't be too careful.
Saeed agrees. Hammett calls out.
We're on our way to Swara. We mean no harm. Let us pass.
Another group of men appears from behind some boulders. None of them are armed, just leather bags draped over their chests. But something doesn't feel right. Then he hears Saeed's voice.
Brother, there are more behind us. We're surrounded.
Hammett turns his camel. Saeed is right. It must be 50 men or more. One of them calls out.
Give us the white man, then you can go.
I can't do that. He is property of the British consul.
He looks once more to his brother and nods. Saeed lifts up his gun and fires into the tribe. And then it's chaos. Inside the tribe's packs are rocks. They begin hurling them at Hammett's men with ferocious speed. The men shoot back, but they're outnumbered. Hammett feels a hard object hit his head. His vision blurs. The last thing he sees is Porter crawling under a camel.
Captain Riley sits in a rented room in New York, staring at a sheaf of pages. Since he was rescued 9 months ago, he's been writing a book about his experience in captivity. An editor here has agreed to help him. The reunion with his family was as sweet as he imagined. His new baby is already walking. A son. He and Phoebe decide to rename the child William Wilshire Riley after the British consul who saved his life and the lives of his men. Upon his return, it takes a few weeks, but he pays Wilshire back thanks to the efforts of James Monroe, the Secretary of State. When Hammett sends the funds to Swara, he asks about his men who are still in the desert and if there's any word of Sidi Hammett. Wilshire writes back that he's heard nothing. The brutal conditions of captivity leave a lasting mark on each of the men on Riley's crew who make it back to America. They suffer from various health problems, and two of them, Clark and Burns, die within 7 years of returning home. The life of Aaron Savage will be cut short too, at age 36. But before he dies, he and his wife have a daughter. When she grows up, she will marry Captain Riley's youngest son. When they have their own child, they will give her the middle name of Wilshire. In December, William Porter arrives in New York and seeks out Captain Riley at his flat. He tells him about his own brutal journey and how Wilshire helped negotiate his freedom. It wouldn't have happened if it weren't for the two men who bought him and promised to take him to Swara. He tells Riley of the epic battle in the sand. Riley's heart sinks.
Did they live?
No, they did not.
Tell me more. What did they look like?
They were fierce men, brave men. One of them had scars on his face. They had double-barrel shotguns. They died trying to get me to safety.
Riley knows it was Hammett trying to keep his word. He mourns the news, not only for the loss of a good man, but because now there is no one looking for his crew members who are still out in the Sahara. In May, Archie Robbins returns home with a tale as harrowing as the one of Riley and his crew. In the end, it was Wilshire's help that also saved him. He will write his own book about his experience in Africa, which becomes a bestseller. He will continue to sail the ocean as the captain of his own ship. Horace Savage will also grow up to captain his own brig called the Albion. A lifelong seeker, he will spend several years in Mexico. He will live to age 82, the last known survivor of the commerce.
All told, 8 men from the Commerce returned to the States. The rest of the crew, Dick Delisle, John Hogan, and Antonio Michel, were lost to the desert and never heard of again. Captain James Riley publishes his book in 1817, a little over 2 years after his capture. It's called Sufferings in Africa, the incredible true story of shipwreck, enslavement, and survival on the Sahara. In it, he spares no detail of his ordeal. The book is an immediate bestseller and propels him to international fame. Congressmen up and down the coast endorse his book. Several people name their children after Consul William Wilshire. A man in South Carolina names his son Sidi Hamet. In Kentucky, a 9-year-old boy on a farm named Abraham Lincoln devours the story. When he becomes president, he will say it was one of the most influential books of his life. Riley uses his platform to speak out against slavery and becomes a fixture in Washington and an outspoken abolitionist. When Missouri is admitted to the Union as a slave state, he writes a letter of protest. When the subject of slavery is brought forward, my whole body is agitated. The hypocritical advocate of slavery shall be detested by all mankind. Riley's experience in the desert leaves him battling chronic arthritis and anxiety for years. It's only when a doctor advises him to return to the sea that his health improves. He even makes a trip back to Swera, where he is reunited with Wilshire. There, he learns of Bill Cossum's recent passing. Riley and Wilshire go into business together, a partnership that lasts until Riley's death in 1840. Captain Riley's original manuscript of his book can be found at the New York Historical Society. This is the final episode of our 4-part series, Shipwreck in the Sahara. On our next episode, I'll be talking to Dean King, the author of Skeletons on the Sahara, the true story that inspired this series. Dean traveled through the Sahara in the footsteps of Captain Riley in the early 2000s and has an amazing story about his own journey. If you like our show, please give us a 5-star rating and a review. Follow Against the Odds on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, the Wondery app, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen 1 week early and ad-free. In the episode notes, you'll find some links and offers from our sponsors. Please support them. By supporting them, you help us offer this show for free. And just a quick note about our scenes. In most cases, we can't exactly know what was said, but everything is based on historical research. If you'd like to learn more about this event, we highly recommend the book Skeletons on the Sahara by Dean King. I'm your host, Mike Corey. Cameron Pasha wrote this episode. Our editors are Matt Wise and Maura Walls. Our consulting producer is Dean King. Brian White is our associate producer. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Sound design by Joe Richardson, with music from Isabel Hirschman. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jentz and Marshall Louis for Wondery.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Against the Odds ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.